Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Lotus Eaters for the 25th of October 2022. I am joined by Carl.
Hello.
And today we're going to be talking about the globalist clue being complete, the media losing its grip, and there's something wrong with America, to say the least. Though I suppose, well, we'll start just by mentioning that we have some free stuff on the website, that being the announcement today. So if you want to go and check it out, do go and check out the premium podcast Thick Concepts that has been made free for a week. So go and enjoy it for a week, and then you're going to pay. So join in. Go and subscribe. Otherwise, we shall begin with the globalist coup.
So Rishi Sunak, as I'm sure you've seen, has become Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. This isn't even very controversial, actually, at least not the way that people think. But I figure what we do is just go through how this came to pass, and a bit of the reaction surrounding it, really. But before we do, if you want to support us, go to lotuseats.com, sign up, and watch our 5-part William the Conqueror series, which has been really interesting, because usually all you learn about William the Conqueror is, well, you know, he rocked up in 1066, won, and then everything was fine, and that's it. And that's actually not true. There's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah, amazingly, when you conquer a place, you've got to actually settle the place.
You do, and William has to spend 20 years putting out revolts and things like this, and then getting into conflicts with the King of France and things like that. It's very interesting. The next one's going to be on the Doomsday Book, because there's a lot of misapprehensions about that too. It assumes for tax, but apparently it's not. But anyway, so let's get on with Boris. So Boris returned from Elba, otherwise known as the Caribbean, to begin what looked like his 100 days campaign. Should have promoted our Napoleon epochs, really, by getting 100 MP nominations. But the thing is, you could see that the tide had turned in the Conservative Party. Despite getting, apparently, 100 nominations, and apparently the paperwork is all done and dusted, all that was, you know, he was going to go in, and, I mean, he would have easily defeated Sunak if it had been put to the members, it was declared a disaster, according to one leftist. Let's watch Steve Baker tell us about why Boris coming back would be a disaster.
There's a lot of love out there for Boris Johnson, and I respect that. I mean, I've been a big fan of Boris Johnson so many times, but this isn't the time for Boris's style. I mean, I'm afraid the trouble is, because of the privileges vote, Boris would be a guaranteed disaster. There's going to be a vote before the House of Commons on this issue of privileges, whether he deliberately misled the House. In that vote, it's guaranteed there'll be a large number of Conservatives who will refuse, as they see it, to lay down their integrity to save him. And at that moment, his premiership will collapse. Now, the best argument I've heard for dealing with that is having the vote on the first day. But that relies on people believing that other MPs think like they do, that you don't vote against a new Prime Minister. But that isn't what will happen. 62 MPs resigned from his government over the Pincher affair, which in the end, whatever one thinks about it, was an issue of conduct and character. Well, those same MPs are not now going to go like lambs through the division lobby. So at that moment that there's a vote in the House of Commons on privilege, his premiership would collapse. It's a guaranteed nailed-on failure, and we cannot allow it to happen.
So you think that a sizable number of Conservative MPs would actually vote to say that he misled Parliament?
One Member of Parliament rang me on Friday to say that they would rather lose the whip than vote for Boris Johnson in that vote. Why? Because they think they're going to lose their seats, and they'll need to make a living. And in order to make a living, they'll need their reputations. And this is why they'd rather lose the whip than vote for Boris in that division. So I'm sorry. Voters out there love him. And he's undoubtedly a wonderful man. He lights the room up when he's in the room. But unfortunately, he doesn't have that, you know, meticulous compliance with tedious rules. He just doesn't do it. And it's caught up with him.
OK, then we put that calculus to the test. Triple whip. If you vote with me, then you're fine. If you don't, you lose your whip, and therefore you're not in the party anymore. Because, as he mentions there, the voters love him, so the threat of them losing their seats isn't there.
Boris can win elections.
So the MPs won't vote for him because they might lose the elections.
Yes.
So you ruined your own point. And then they're going to have to keep their face?
Their reputation.
It's like,
because if they lose their seats, they're going to need
you'll never work again in England if you ever vote for Boris Johnson. He's basically Hitler, I heard.
Well, that's the opinion of one free market leftist. But I think that Steve is probably representing the internal opinion of the Conservative Party. Right? They, for some reason, are all hung up.
Parliamentary members.
Yes, because I was going to say, this is in opposition to what the actual members of the Conservative, the parliamentary...
Conservative members do not agree, but there are a load of Conservative MPs who have decided that, well, they should run the country.
Who are convinced they're going to lose their seats, and at the rate they're going, I think they're going to.
To pick it as their destiny, which...
Yeah, they have, yeah. This is about internal party politics, not about public opinion, not about the members' opinion, and not about whether Boris would actually be able to deliver in elections, which surely is really the final litmus test of any democratic politician.
Also, the Conservative Party, the only thing it cares about is power.
Yes.
And even its own members apparently lost that lesson, which is amazing. This is the thing, I was looking at the candidates, what do I care? Like, you know, a week from now, what would actually change? And I was thinking, the only thing that would change...
Your taxes will go up.
Well, they're going up either way. No matter who gets in, the policies will be the same.
Well, Liz Truss wanted to love them.
But if... Well, see how they allowed that to happen.
Yeah, four days later, she's gone.
But if Boris Johnson had got back in, just on a political calculus front, Nigel Farage doesn't have a perfect opportunity to run back into politics and try and kill the Conservative Party.
No.
Whereas if it's anyone else, he obviously does.
Yes.
And he's now making videos talking about how he's going to get back into politics and destroy the Conservative Party.
Anytime you're ready, Nigel.
Good job.
Yeah. And so, anyway, that free market leftist was saying that he thinks Boris should pull out, and if he wants to be PM again, he has to wait. Now is not the time. This scandal that everyone's so hung up about, the public doesn't care about at all and couldn't tell you anything about. He has to wait or become like the chair of the party, but he can't be the PM. And it's like, okay, but this is your internal autism. I don't care about this. But anyway, Boris decided to bow to the peer pressure of his fellow MPs and pull out. In a statement, Johnson said that he cleared the very high hurdle of 102 nominations, but came to the conclusion that this is simply not the right time. So he thinks that also...
Yeah, we'll wait for the Labour Party to take over the country and then we'll do something.
Well, I mean, he thinks there would have been a very good chance that he would have been back in number 10 by the end of the week if he'd stood, which is obviously true. Yeah. Because Rishi keeps losing to the members. The members keep voting for even people like Liz Truss. And so when Boris pulled out, well, this was the BBC reporting on it. Let's watch.
Well, this is all very exciting, isn't it? Hello and welcome to our look ahead to what the papers will be bringing us tomorrow. Am I allowed to be this gleeful? Well, I am.
Well, the answer is she's not allowed to be that gleeful because she was taken off air for this.
There's a breach of impartiality.
Obvious bias, yes. But this just goes to show you the level of glee in the BBC about Boris Johnson. It's like, well, hang on a second. Boris, the social liberal, G7 loving, Ukraine supporting, like, internationalist.
Yeah, like, I have no real love for Boris Johnson.
No.
Because he had his promise, completely ruined it.
Yeah.
And is what he is. But just thinking in pure, like, political terms, it's obvious that he would be the one that could lead the Conservatives to another re-election victory with MPCs. But
because he is likeable.
He could get that slim margin.
Yeah. But why are they so bothered about it? Boris does everything they want. Like, Carrie would be puppeteering him with the LGBT stuff and the climate change stuff. Like, Boris is their man, almost, you know, through and through. So I don't even see what... Like, if he was like Trump in any way, shape or form, I'd be happy about it.
You'd understand why the left hated him.
I would understand. It's a remarkable simulacrum, right? They're like, oh, look at this shadow puppet. And it's like, yeah, but when you actually look at it, it's not anything that you say it is. But anyway, she was taken off air, which is hilarious. We don't have to be impartial, so screw them.
Yeah, it's because we don't steal the taxpayers' money.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we're privately funded by you guys, in fact. So thanks. But anyway, so the BBC can really hardly believe that Rishi is Prime Minister because, I mean... How did this happen? Watch.
Mr Sunak will be replacing Liz Truss just 7 weeks after she defeated him in the previous contest.
It's quite astonishing, isn't it, that the guy who was defeated by the current Prime Minister is replacing her a matter of weeks after she took office.
Quite astonishing. Really gives you faith in democracy. The Rishi Sunak losing in landslide votes as well. Like two-thirds votes for Liz Truss.
And the only candidate you did have that was popular with the members and the public...
Were refusing to allow.
You blocked from standing.
Hmm.
Good move. I'm sure this will go well.
Much democracy. Very representative. It's weird how Rishi Sunak keeps failing upwards as well. Like, you know, no one wanted him. And yet now he's the Prime Minister. Oh my God. It's almost like there's some hidden force behind the scenes that's making this happen, regardless of what people vote for. Rishi Sunak has apparently enjoyed the fastest journey in modern political history from starting as an MP to becoming a Prime Minister. It's been 7 years that he's been an MP, and now he's in charge of the entire country.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It's staggering. It's incredible. He first entered the House of Commons in 2015 when he won the seat of Richmond, North Yorkshire, with 51% of the vote. That's right, average Yorkshireman, Rishi Sunak, parachuted in to possibly the safest seat the Conservatives have that's voted Conservative since 1906.
And then they instantly push him up the party apparatus and PM.
And take out the popularly elected with the members candidate. No, you're gone. Just revolt against you, taking you out. Sit down with the 1922 committee and said, no, we really wanted Rishi, which is why he ran against Boris, he ran against you, ran against everyone, and now we're just installing him. That's what's happened here. So anyway, I mean, this is something that people have been very aware of. It's like, hang on, this average Yorkshireman doesn't know a single working class person.
And doesn't want to.
How exactly is that? I mean, he says, you know, I've got friends who are aristocrats, I have friends who are upper class, I have friends who, you know, working class. Well, not working class.
Like, yeah, who would want that?
Well, how would he get
them? For an aristocrat.
Well, how would he get them? He's an MP for Yorkshire. It's basically the Surrey of the North, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, you know.
This is the stupidest possible option.
Every house in Yorkshire is £1 million up, isn't it? Sorry, go on.
I can't get over it. I know we're going into it. I'm sort of interrupting, but it's just...
It's fine.
What the hell's happening, man?
Well, we're watching a globalist coup take place in real time in front of our eyes, where literally a rootless cosmopolitan is being given a safe Conservative seat in order to take over the party for the interests of Goldman Sachs. I'm not even joking. This is totally unironically what is happening. We'll get into Rishi's background in a minute, just so people can see. I'm not making this up, you know.
I know, but it's just the fact that all this came from that unified right who had come together to say, you know... Brexit now, get rid of the foreigners, and then it's collapsed so fast to the point that we're being run by international finance.
It has collapsed within the 5-year window of them being voted out. I mean, that's how, Boris is in three years. Yeah, 3 years. Like, it's like that massive general election win that Boris won feels like a lifetime ago now.
Because it is in politics.
Pretty much. But anyway, so Rishi Sunak, you know that Rishi is evil, right? And am I going to take that back? No, I'm not going to take that back. No, I'm going to call him evil. Is it okay for me to call him evil? Yeah, but I mean, it's fine, isn't it?
I don't think
puppet
anyone has
globalist.
An opinion on him.
Well, actually, lots of people did have opinions on him. Do you remember in 2020 when he was called Dishy Rishi?
No.
And Vice Media jumped to his defense?
What?
If you're being defended by Vice and you get positive mainstream media coverage, if they're not calling you far right, I'm not voting for you. End of story, because they obviously see you as one of theirs. This is great, right? By the beginning of April 2020, online fawning over Dishy Rishi hit feverish levels. The phenomenon, initially spawned by thirsty responses to a picture of him in a grey hoodie, this is the picture. Scroll down a bit, John, so you can see the full picture.
pure AstroTurf is what
obviously,
I'm getting.
Obviously.
This means nothing.
Everything about Rishi Sunak is pure AstroTurf, right? But initially spawned thirsty responses to a picture of him in a grey hoodie, materialised into a two tone deaf at best and racially fetishised at worst pieces in GQ and Vogue. Again, if GQ and Vogue are fluffing you as a conservative, then you're not a conservative, right? Both pieces reiterated his public characterisation as nerdy, cute and capable. Miniature, I think, is the correct characterisation, which we'll get to in a minute.
Is this not what you want, ladies?
Yeah, ladies.
Look at this.
Do you not want a 5'6" aristocrat?
All the papers are coming out being like, look, you like this, right? It's good. It's cute, isn't it? Like, no.
But as writers Dura Shandinjova and Porna Bell have pointed out, the implication was that fancying an Indian man was unexpected and somehow strange. Okay. Anyway,
that's going.
To know who Rishi serves, basically all you have to do is look at the people who are thrilled with his ascension. Everyone's favourite Irishman. Let's play this clip.
To KRLR.
And whether it's the United Kingdom or just today, we've got news that Rashid Sunak is now the Prime Minister. As my brother would say, go figure. And the Conservative Party expected to become the Prime Minister, I think, tomorrow when he goes to see the King. Pretty astounding. A groundbreaking milestone, and it matters. It matters.
A groundbreaking milestone that Rashid Sunak is now the Prime Minister of the Conservative Party in the United Kingdom. I mean, it matters,
cheering. Could you imagine going to the, what is it, the White House Correspondents' Dinner and they all cheer for you? Well, I mean, you just think, oh God, I'm a puppet.
Yes, but also they're all cheering because they put a white guy in charge. Ooh, I'd be like, that's weird. No, Joe Biden's like, no, Indian Rashid guy in charge of Britain. That's brilliant. I'm Irish. My fellow non-whites need to be taking over. This is, of course, described by Rishi Sunak's Hindu temple that he goes to as a Barack Obama moment. Do you know anything about Hinduism, Callum?
Oh, boy. It's not the most tolerant of places.
Okay, well, sure. I mean, I'm not saying it's tolerant or intolerant.
I just didn't know if you were going into what Gandhi said about the Africans.
No, I wasn't.
You read about that?
I know what Gandhi's opinions on Obama would have been.
Yep.
Not very progressive. But the point is, do you know anything about Hinduism as a religion?
Here and there.
Yeah?
Don't really care.
I don't know anything about it, really. Lots of strange foreign gods. I don't know anything about it. But that's the point, isn't it? Like, this is not, like, native. This is obviously from India. We do not know anything about this. And yet, you know, Sunak, as a practicing Hindu, grew up worshipping with his family at the Vedic Society Temple in Southampton, which is exactly where you'd expect to see one of those temples, which his grandfather co-founded 50 years ago, and his extended family still pray. Don't you feel represented? I feel so represented by our government.
English history just stopped 50 years ago.
And
we've had a good 50 years.
In a Hindu temple, too. Which is precisely where our installed Prime Minister goes to pray. And I don't even know what the person in charge of a Hindu temple is called. Priest?
The Hindu fella.
The I don't even know. But anyway, the chap in charge said, Rishi becoming Prime Minister is Great Britain's Barack Obama moment, which is brilliant. I hated Obama. People are suddenly feeling proud of this moment, and they think it's an icebreaker, just like Barack Obama moment happened in the UK. This is Britain's moment.
We don't have some, like, horrific history with the Indians.
No.
It's actually surprisingly cordial, considering all that happened.
Well, Rishi Sunak's family are Indian administrators who come from East Africa. So they were over administrating East Africa on behalf of the British Empire. And when decolonialism happened, Rishi and his family, well, Rishi's family, he wasn't alive at this point, moved to England. Southampton.
So it's not some, you know, 400-year...
Which is why he became an MP in Yorkshire.
Oppressed group.
No.
Finally became the leader of...
No, these were the upper class who were making good out of the empire.
Feels good to be an imperial elite, if you were one.
Just saying, though, this isn't a win for Asians, as Nadia Whittam's pointing out. Oh, Mr. Sunak's not on your side just because he's an Indian. She tweeted this out and then deleted it, because it doesn't look good.
The global brown race.
Yeah, exactly. Whittam, whose parents are Indian, also attacked Mr. Sunak and his wife for their family wealth, which is apparently twice the estimated wealth of Charles III. Rishi Sunak as Prime Minister isn't a win for Asian representation. And that's because he's going to crack down the grooming gangs, apparently, I hear.
Who believes that?
Yeah, well, no, obviously. But I mean, like, you know, good luck, you know, please, why not? I mean, even if the globalists, like, surely they can agree that having ethnic rape gangs is bad?
I mean, to be fair, there is a lot of bridge building between the English and the Hindus on this topic.
I agree.
Which is the Hindus are like, we told you not to bring them, and that's what happened. Like, we've been dealing with this for hundreds of years.
I agree.
We're like, okay, fair enough, we'll work with you on this, but, you know, if he's not going to build bridges with Modi, then...
Yeah, well, who knows? But he did. This was in 2020 again, I think it was. But he did say that you know, police officers should be fully focused on fighting actual crime than bad jokes on Twitter. And I would definitely put raping children in the actual crime category. So, and I would definitely put bad jokes on Twitter in the not a crime category. So at least, you know, Rishi's doing something good there. But anyway, let's go through Rishi's history a bit. He was born in Southampton in 1980 to Indian parents who had moved to the UK from East Africa. No further information from The Guardian on what they were doing in East Africa. Don't need to worry about it. His father's a GP.
So some guys in the chat also mentioning, it's just funny how all the Indians in East Africa, when they became refugees, didn't go to India.
Weird that, isn't it? because they were collaborators with the Empire.
Anyway.
Yeah, his mum ran her own pharmacy. GP and ran a pharmacy. It's a proper working class roots there. The eldest of three children, Seneca was educated at private boarding school, Winchester College, which is why he's an MP in Yorkshire. He went on to study politics, philosophy and economics at the University of Oxford and was awarded a first class degree. He later gained a Master's of Business Administration at Stanford University. Again, it's proper working class lad, this, where he met Akshata Murthy, his future wife. She is the daughter of Indian billionaire Nayara Murthy, often described as the Bill Gates of India, who founded the software company Infosys, which his daughter has a 0.91% stake in, worth about £700 million.
Imagine having less than 1% of a company.
Who cares?
Being worth £700 million.
That still makes you a millionaire.
And that's my point. Like, at least they know how much the cost of living crisis is hitting all of us. the price for their heated swimming pool has gone up 40%.
Do you know what's really interesting as well? Is that she is a non-domiciled UK resident, which means she doesn't pay tax in this country.
That's a lot of swimming pools to heat. Got to save money somewhere.
Sunak himself admits holding a US green card, signalling an intention to eventually become an American citizen until October 2021, months after becoming Chancellor.
So we are literally ruled by an anywhere person.
Yes. Rootless cosmopolitan.
Wife.
Yes. Yes, exactly. His anywhere billionaire wife.
Cool.
Because, I mean, she owns multiple companies. She just has a stake in this huge company. So yeah, he was elected the MP for Richmond in North Yorkshire in 2015. I hope you're feeling represented, Yorkshireman.
I'm just thinking.
Fellow Yorkshireman, I should say. I can't get over it.
If everything went to pot, where was Churchill going to run to?
I don't know. Nowhere.
Whereas everything goes to pot here.
Well, America, I suppose.
See you guys.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, Sunak's got lots of options, frankly. So, you know, why should he care? But anyway, like I said, that was the country's safest seat for the Tories, being Tory since 1906. And it's like, okay, that's all well and good, right? But you guys voted this guy to where he is. Like, you were like, hey, that's an average Yorkshireman. I'm voting for him. That's representation. He's going to care about local community issues.
God, we desperately don't want to lose our seats. Quick, get this guy in instead of Boris.
Yep. All I'm saying is that people vote for these. You know, you don't have to vote for this.
I'm quite happy, frankly. I think it's really dumb, but I'm just lovely and happy that if Nigel Farage decides to get back into the race, just kill it. Just kill the Conservative Party. Go for it.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone will weep.
Literally going to be smothering the Conservative Party with a pillow. From 2001 to 2004, Sunak was an analyst for the investment bank Goldman Sachs, and later he was a partner in two hedge funds. Oh, brilliant. And so when people are tweeting out things like, well, whatever side you're on, whatever your ethnicity, this is a truly historic moment. The UK has its first Goldman Sachs Prime Minister. It's like, probably not the first, but he's certainly a Goldman Sachs Prime Minister. Absolutely true.
Whatever your ethnicity, at least we're all billionaires.
I mean, it's just so transparent.
So inclusive.
Yeah, but democracy in this country is just over. I'm sorry, but this is just the end of it, right? But anyway, they're not wrong about the Goldman Sachs Prime Minister. And what's interesting is that Infosys is an official partner of the World Economic Forum. The Infosys gives millions of pounds to the World Economic Forum. And of course, they want social credit scores. They want to have a digital currency. Sunak has been in favour of basically all of these things. And it's the World Economic Forum wants social credit scores. Social credit priorities would likely focus on left-wing social issues like climate change, diversity, and equity. Yes, of course they will. Rishi is, of course, the diversity candidate because diversity built Britain. Did it not, Rishi? I mean, can we get that picture up? Just
all 50 years of history that we have has been built by diversity.
Yeah.
We don't have any more history than that. So,
no.
It's good to know.
I mean, Britain wasn't created in 1706.
No, it was about 1960.
Yeah.
Somewhere about there.
Yeah.
We had to be rebuilt because of the war, 15 years after the war had ended, which makes all kinds of sense.
Yeah, yeah. Something about losing the empire as well. But anyway, the point is the Tories are the party of diversity now. So they are exactly what Labour have made of them. At least says one Tory MP. Let's watch this next clip.
We've got to come together. We have got to unite. And, you know, we are going to. So come next spring, come next summer, all this in the last few weeks, last couple of months, I think, you know, inshallah, it is going to be a distant dream.
Is it recoverable, though?
Yes.
Do you think the party...
It's actually surprisingly based. Quite like that.
Inshallah.
He served in Iraq.
Yeah. So. Yeah, well, he's English. Yeah, Bob Seeley.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just casually throws out Tory parties casually. Oh, yeah, inshallah.
We're going to have to learn from the Muslim world about how to get ourselves out of a position of subjugation, as Sayyid Qutb said himself.
Which is exactly what Matt Hancock is basically saying. Matt Hancock tweeted this out, right? A wonderful demonstration of modern Britain that we have a Christian king, a Hindu prime minister, a Jewish home secretary, and a Muslim mayor of London. I'm proud to live in such a diverse and tolerant country. How pathetically servile is that?
God, what tolerance. to get the home secretary and the Muslim mayor together and have a conversation.
In fact, John's comment underneath is fantastic. A wonderful demonstration of modern conservatism, that we celebrate irrelevant identity label, irrelevant identity label, irrelevant identity label, and another irrelevant identity label. The concept of diversity is an ideological parasite that must be eradicated. Perfect phrasing, John, actually. Gotta say that was good. But yeah, like, all of this servile brown-nosing didn't help. When Rishi Sunak was being congratulated, you can see Matt Hancock there. Oh, no, ghosted. No one's interested in you, Matt. You are pathetic, and everyone can see it. Anyway, let's listen to Rishi's first speech, which is just... I mean, really, I think if there's one word you could use to describe Rishi Sunak, it's short, right? But the second word you would use is fabulously wealthy cosmopolitan. But the third would also be charismatic, right? Pure, raw charisma. This guy's going to win elections. Let's listen.
It's a good speech.
Brilliant.
I'd like to pay tribute to Liz Truss for her dedicated public service to the country. She has led with dignity and grace through a time of great change and under exceptionally difficult circumstances, both at home and abroad.
Why is it not looking at the camera?
I am humbled and honoured to have the support of my parliamentary colleagues and to be elected as leader of the Conservative and Unionist Party.
Is there a teleprompter on another side of the room?
I have no idea.
To be able to serve the party I love and give back to the country I owe so much to. The United Kingdom is a great country, but there is no doubt we face
country is good. That's why I rule.
Challenge. We now need stability and unity, and I will make it my utmost priority to bring our party and our country together, because that is the only way we will overcome the challenges we face and build a better, more prosperous future for our children and our grandchildren. I pledge that I will serve you with integrity and humility, and I will work day in, day out to deliver for the British people.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I've seen children give better performances.
Yeah, me too.
I just can't get over how he was just staring off at presumably the teleprompter, which is...
not aligned with the camera for some reason.
Even in the slightest, though.
Yeah.
Like, it was clearly like a few metres to the right or something. So he's not even looking at you as he reads some crap he can barely get out.
And I love that, you know, I respect Liz Truss for being the first Prime Minister with learning disabilities or whatever. You know, it's like she's done a great job. It's like, well, she did all right for someone of her IQ. But what I think is really funny is the fact that it goes to show you how short Rishi Sunak was, because that British flag was one of those little desk British flags. And then so afterwards, Rishi went and gave a speech outside of 10 Downing Street. And you can see just how short he is, because look at how far underneath the letter of the numbers 10 he is. Like, he is such a midget. And apparently they pulled his legs and forward, like brought it really far forward, just to make him look bigger through forced perspective. I mean, I know I shouldn't be mean about it, but like, he is so diminutive. It's really bizarre. But anyway, let's listen to this amazing speech.
All I can say is that I am not daunted. I know the high office I have accepted, and I hope to live up to its demands.
Does he have emotions?
But when the opportunity to serve comes along, you cannot question the moment, only your willingness. So I stand here before you, ready to lead our country into the future.
I can hear
I predict a riot, yeah, playing in the background, which is hilarious. But But again, I love this. When the opportunities serve, so what do you mean the opportunities serve? You got downvoted multiple times. Then you're installed. This is an opportunity. You are part of a plot to make this happen, Rishi. Anyway, so look, going on, his approval ratings are better than Liz Truss's, I suppose. But
what does that mean?
Exactly nothing. That's, yeah. His approval ratings are slightly better than the Holocaust.
Potted plant.
Yeah. So,
Rishi's more popular than the Holocaust. Vote for me.
Well, yes, but Keir Starmer is doing surprisingly well. By just keeping his mouth shut.
Yeah.
What I love about this, though, come the next election, if it's still Rishi Sunak, it's just going to be these two balls of charisma, these fiery, charismatic populists.
All Nigel has to do is come out and drink a pint.
Yeah, I know.
Just on stage.
I know. It's going to be the two least exciting people in all of human history competing for your vote. It's going to be incredible.
This is perfect. This is the most fertile ground we've had in decades.
Yeah, I know. Nigel couldn't have asked for things to be more in his favour at this point, you know. Just come out with a good. Honestly, I'd just call it the Brexit Party again. Just be like, nah, we're Brexiteers. We're full Brexit, which means none of this. But the point is, like, even if Rishi Sunak with his popularity would stand, Starmer's still going to get a bigger win than Boris got. 389 seats.
Yeah, if no one but leftist activists vote. Then,
yeah. But what's Rishi likely to do very quickly? Raise taxes.
Popular.
Cut public services. Really popular. Lift the fracking ban, which was not very popular. And then go on to question the NHS because, of course, it's underfunded.
Oh, I thought he was going to actually cut some of the diversity spending. No,
he's going to find ways of raising our taxes to pay for the foreigners who need to be treated by the NHS. And, of course, on the question of immigration, Sunak signalled he would relax controls to boost some sectors such as science. She's brilliant.
I wish I had some food to throw at the screen.
The NHS is overwhelmed. I'm going to let more people into the country to take advantage of our free at the point of use services. So there we go. The global cabal has taken over the Conservative Party by making the Conservative Party ungovernable for anyone who's not a Goldman Sachs banker. But now a Goldman Sachs banker is in charge. They're all going to be like, oh, brilliant. This is what we wanted. We can continue extorting this province of the global empire. And that's our future until... hopefully Nigel Farage comes along and smashes the lot of them.
I don't know if you saw the footage of the Indians reacting to this. A few of them are like, oh, yeah, it's kind of like, we're the viceroys now.
I did see some of that. Yeah. We can cover that tomorrow or something. Yeah.
Completely unelected.
Yeah.
But we should do for something more fun. The media is completely losing its grip, and I thought we'd enjoy this. So we'll start off just by mentioning some premium content on the website, the newest thing being the reemergence of the totalitarian leftists. And of course, with an audio track for Silver and Gold Tears, go and check that out. But the relationship obviously being that, well, in a totalitarian leftist society, of course there is no freedom of speech, but there's also no freedom to be silent. And that's the real important freedom.
That's a good point.
Which is to shut up and just at least have that kind of freedom from the world. But there isn't that. Because if we go to the MSNBC, they decided to go and check up on a focus group and ask them about January 6th, expecting that they would, do as told and tell us about how bad January 6th was and how it was horrible. Yeah. Can't believe Trump did this. He personally went in and killed Nancy Pelosi, I heard. Or something like that. Who cares? Just make up more lies and see if they'll stick, was the strategy. And the focus group said, no, that didn't work.
The chugs are revolting.
Let's play the first clip.
Mastriano was at the insurrection and he was photographed breaching one of the restricted areas. Is that okay?
Which area? Because I saw a video where Capitol officers were taking away barriers and unlocking
doors.
People. So, I mean,
they opened the gates.
So
and
it shouldn't be disqualifying for an elected official
if they participated
in January 6th?
He didn't strike anybody. He didn't hurt anybody.
And the only one that died was a protester there, not a Capitol police
officer. An unarmed female veteran.
That's the only one that died.
The only one who died.
A police officer did die.
No. It was a stroke.
That's not
on site.
Caused by that, that's because he shouldn't have been a police officer. It was one.
I love how they quickly shut it down.
These guys have got it locked down as well. They know exactly what the narrative is.
No, shut up. That wasn't
what
happened.
Sicknick died of unrelated causes days afterwards.
But it's the point that the media's got their narrative, which is that it was horrible. I can see people in the chat saying that Trump went in, he raped AOC, killed Nancy Pelosi, assassinated Caesar or something. I don't know. Just more lies. Such as, 10 police officers were mutilated on the steps of the Capitol. No.
Well, this has swung me in favour of Trump over DeSantis.
But they, you know, and then there are the people who have seen the video evidence of what happened on the day. They're just like, no, that's not what happened. Media lady, stop lying, idiot. Yeah. And it continues because she continued to try and push this. Say, well, wasn't it horrible? What happened? It's unprecedented violence in American politics. What are you, mad?
When has this ever happened before?
Yeah, let's play that.
So what do you make, though, overall of January 6th? I mean, it was, watching that footage, it was pretty disturbing. I mean, there were people throwing excrement at the walls, and it was our, you know, it's the Capitol.
It looked a lot like Antifa's action.
Except on a much smaller scale, it looked the same as the Black Lives Matter riots.
That's what I saw the similarities to be.
Minneapolis burns, Kenosha burns.
But so it's okay just because one side that you disagree with?
I'm saying Antifa infiltrated.
It's good for one, it's good for the other.
Anybody who harmed anybody, anybody who caused property destruction, that needs to be dealt with. But if you're there making your voice heard at the people's house, no less, that's, again, it's a fundamental constitutional right of an American citizen. And people should not be being held political prisoner because of it.
For misdemeanors. That's East Germany.
That's East Germany.
Tactics.
Yeah, that's what's scary.
It was an actual fiery but mostly peaceful protest.
Every word uttered
is true.
Is not only true, it is something which they were really not hoping for.
What I love is just regular people. These just totally regular people who are obviously like radicalized by the left at this point.
But you have the media elites who think they're so above, like they're the party cadres who can just dictate to everyone what the truth is. But like, isn't it horrible what happened here? Violence in American politics? They just go,
no, it's great. Wait, people's house.
We remember Antifa. Like, for 2 years, you burnt down several cities. Yeah. I mean, in 2016, when Trump was elected, you all went out and burnt stuff down because you couldn't handle it. And then in 2020, he decided to destroy the entire country.
Shame they didn't mention the attack on the White House that forced Trump to go into the bunker.
Sure, there's that too. But it's just
like, you guys are lunatics. What are you talking about?
But that freedom to, you know, speak is just finally there in their face. Which
I can't
believe
this made it to
the reality.
Air?
Yeah, you would have thought they deleted the whole thing, but they continued as well. Which is that one of the lads here decides to make the obvious point. Well, which is that, no, you guys are just using January 6th as your Reichstag fire, your justification for anything. You know, look how horrible it was, but it wasn't. Shut up. Stop lying.
I'm in favor of riots in the Capitol.
Let's play.
Is the protest legitimate in your eyes?
Administration,
because
I feel like, is using it as their Reichstag fire.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they're using it as. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that President Trump could have quelled the violence that day?
Not him. I don't think so.
I don't think so.
It started while he was still speaking.
More violence.
I was actually there. I was there to see what I thought was going to be the last time I ever saw Trump. A little guy.
So did he tell everybody to go and start rioting?
No.
I didn't think so.
No. And it actually, I stayed for the whole speech, like a ton of people did.
Mm-hmm.
And then we all headed to the Capitol because he said, let's go to the Capitol and peacefully let our voices be heard. And we get to the Capitol, we're like, what the hell's going on? Because it had already happened.
I'm pretty sure I saw Democratic operatives instigating people to cross barriers.
Yeah, me too.
It's just, you can imagine the pure salt the producers must have felt. We've spent all this time putting this focus group together. We're going to get what we want out of this. Trump's done some bad things or something.
But I mean, these guys must have had social media accounts.
Yeah, I imagine they all took each other's numbers.
Yeah, but did the producers not, like, check their social media accounts?
I don't know, but they may not even have that. Because that's the thing. It's so obvious what the truth is, and it's so obvious what the media want to feed you, which is, even in her own questioning, you could see her there. Wasn't it horrible? What?
But
no.
How do you end up with an entire panel of, like, you know, red-pilled MAGA chuds?
Because your grip is that bad,
like,
at this point.
You're trying
to sell people that much S that stinks so bad,
but this,
no one's going to buy it.
I mean, it just strikes me as being so completely incompetent on the part of MSNBC.
I really think it's just they've really thought in leftist land in America that they can really stick this January 6th stuff. Yeah. Trump, basically, he orchestrated the whole thing. It was planned from the top. This narrative was fed to everyone, and everyone just went, that's not true.
Trump is the American Lenin. Am I right, folks?
It's just, on no level is this even slightly convincing.
Yeah.
And even if the random lies you made up, such as the 10 police officers died in the process or some bollocks.
Excrement on the walls.
No, none of that. It just the video evidence, the whole thing was live streamed, which is another miracle of the modern age, I suppose. But it's,
we got to see Baked Alaska in Nancy Pelosi's office.
Yeah. I just think the last question there, which she's saying, well, you know, couldn't have Trump done something about this? No, obviously not. I was there. I was listening to the speech, like the rest of the supporters.
Trump doesn't control the Democrat insurgents.
No, a bunch of these guys who keep speaking to the rear pieces left because they weren't interested in the speech, whereas we were there for the speech.
Do you remember that guy, the tall guy, who was yelling, we have to go to the Capitol?
Yeah, in fact, I do.
Well, who is he?
Ted Cruz is going to tell us.
Oh, okay.
So we actually have, if you go to the next link, we have a YouTube link, which people should go and check out. I've had to cut it down because of time. But you can see here, this is from Ted Cruz's account. And he's actually, this is an old footage from January 2022, where he just grills the FBI on, so your folks, were they there or not? Let's play and enjoy this.
I want to turn to the FBI. How many FBI agents or confidential informants actively participated in the events of January 6th?
Sir, I'm sure you can appreciate that I can't go into the specifics of sources and methods.
Did any FBI agents or confidential informants actively participate in the events of January 6th? Yes or no?
Sir, I can't answer that.
Did any FBI agents or confidential informants commit crimes of violence on January 6th?
I can't answer that, sir.
Yes. Did any FBI agents or FBI informants actively encourage and incite crimes of violence on January 6th?
Sir, I can't answer that.
Ms. Sadburn, who is Ray Epps?
I'm aware of the individual, sir. I don't have the specific background to him.
On the night of January 5th, 2021, Epps wandered around the crowd that had gathered. And there's video out there of him chanting, tomorrow, we need to get into the Capitol, into the Capitol. This was strange behavior, so strange that the crowd began chanting, Fed, 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 Fed. Ms. Sanborn, was Ray Epps a Fed?
Sir, I cannot answer that question.
Mr. Epps is seen whispering to a person, and 5 seconds later, 5 seconds after he's whispering to a person, that same person begins to forcibly tear down the barricades. Did Mr. Epps urge them to tear down the barricades?
Sir, similar to the other answers, I cannot answer that.
So yes to all that. Right, okay. Great.
No, she just can't answer it. What's suspicious about any of that?
If the answer was no, she'd say no.
Yeah. I didn't have any agents there. Why would we? That would be pretty weird.
I love the American Patriots, though. Let's go do this terrible thing. Fed. You got him, guys.
And don't worry. No, we know that Ted Cruz is actually a conspiracy theorist. This is all made up. Yeah. He's clearly in the wrong because the FBI are totally trustworthy, such as when they also decide to tell us that Virginia's license plate is a far-right symbol. This is unironically what they did.
Okay, good.
They said the Gadsden flag, as you can see there, this is training materials for FBI agents. They're being trained that the Virginia license plate is also some kind of far-right symbol that needs to be shut down.
So Virginia's based, got it.
Yeah, but there you have it. Just the FBI, institutionally confused, to say the least, politicized beyond belief. And we also have the media, though.
But it's such a tepid, like, you know,
don't tread
statement.
On me.
Yeah.
These people are anti-FBI. Terrorists.
Okay. Amazing.
Yeah. And if you're the next one here, but the media come in to tell us, actually, no, forget your lying eyes and ears. Instead, Ted Cruz still believes in baseless theories that the FBI incited January 6th Capitol riots. How do we know? The FBI told us.
But this is great accidental advertising for Ted Cruz.
Yeah, it is. But I'm not joking when I say the reason as to why we know that it's baseless conspiracy theories because the FBI told us it's a baseless conspiracy theory.
If there's anyone I trust, it's the FBI.
Yeah, the next link here. This is Reuters telling us that the FBI says the FBI did nothing wrong.
Well, there we go. Case closed. Ted Cruz is a lunatic. What more do you need?
But Ted Cruz has been doing some other things that are interesting. I thought we'd enjoy with the media losing its grip, which is he started to go on The View. I always kind of love. Ted Cruz got some masculine energy turning up in a very feminine space.
Yeah, yeah.
Very feminine leftist space, of course. The imagery alone is beautiful. Oh, yeah. But we have him posting here that The View couldn't handle learning about the hypocrisy of the Democrats, blah, 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 blah. And I suppose we'll play this first clip in which he points out the hypocrisy.
There are a lot of folks in the media that try to, anytime a Republican is in front of a TV camera, try to say the election was fair and square and legitimate. You know who y'all don't do that to? You don't do it to Hillary Clinton, who stood up and said Trump stole the election.
They didn't storm the Capitol. They didn't try to kill my former president.
Who said that the election was stolen. They sat here and said it was illegitimate,
and
you guys were fine with it. Okay, so it's illegitimate when Republicans win, but not when Democrats win.
No, you know, here's the thing. We may not like when Republicans win, but we don't go and we don't storm. We don't try to change, but
we'll go true.
Did I miss an entire year of Antifa riots where cities across this country were burning and police cars were being firebombed? Your position is the left doesn't engage in violence, really?
No, they wanted to noose our friend Mike Pence. Like, how do we make sense of that?
You just accused us of doing something we didn't do. You said Hillary Clinton didn't say whatever she didn't say. I'm saying to you, listen.
And she said it's sitting here, and you were fine with her saying it was illegitimate
for
Republicans to win.
They literally stormed the building when Kavanaugh was selected.
But it also just on the point, he brings up the Antifa riots, and she goes, I don't even know what Antifa is.
I mean, I believe her, to be honest.
God, I imagine if right-wingers were actually that kind of slippery. I mean, it's the scumbaggest nature with every supporter knows that you're lying.
Like, can we just lie our way to power? I mean, it worked for the left.
It's an option on the table at this point, apparently, which is that you can have Whoopi Goldberg over there be like, I don't know what Antifa is, and she smiles. Because
but also, they were right in Justin, whatever they did.
Anyway, but there's the obvious hypocrisy. And the point he makes there specifically, that when you have Hillary Clinton on, you don't sit there and demand that she tells us that the 2016 election was perfect in every single way and there was nothing wrong and blah, blah, blah. And then at the end of it, I don't know if you caught it, she responds by saying, but it was true for her. I don't know what that argument is. It was true for her.
It's her truth, Callum.
So we have to accept it because, well, she is a woman.
But for some reason, it's not their truth when the Republicans are saying it.
No, in which case, no, instead the freedom of silence cannot be allowed, and instead you must say what the party wants you to. And in fact, we have it. This is the tweet in which he's actually referencing. Trump knows he's an illegitimate president, and because of that, he's very insecure.
When was this posted? What's the date on this?
This is 2019, this one. This is quite recent.
So she was even on their show.
Yeah, on their show. The same chair.
I can't get over it, man.
It's unbelievable. We'll play because it's got to be seen to be believed.
I do think that he knows he's an illegitimate president. And because of that, he's very insecure about it. Look what he's trying to do now. I mean, part of the Ukraine scandal that is slowly coming to light is he's trying to figure out how to say, no, it wasn't the Russians, even though our intelligence community and everyone who's looked at this said, yeah, it was the Russians. He's trying to say, no, somehow it was, Obama, Hillary, whoever. So he's obsessed with the fact that he was helped a lot in unprecedented ways.
His ego can't handle it.
Now all of a sudden we have a president who gets rid of people who disagree with him, who tries to silence people, who is sending our attorney general apparently willingly on this round-the-world trip to make up stuff to try to prove that his election wasn't influenced by the
make
Russians.
Make up stuff, eh?
To prove the election.
Where's the evidence of any of that, Hillary?
Even in 2019, she still sat there going, yeah, the Russians did this.
I mean, how many investigations were there?
I can't remember.
It's got to be at least half a dozen that found... I mean, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I can't believe that it was Trump that was the goodest boy.
Yeah.
I just can't get over it.
But it's when you remember how bad the opposition is, it's like, oh, God.
Yeah, but how is it that they dug forever on Trump and found almost nothing? Like, of all the people in the world.
Grabbing a pussy, so that's pretty bad.
But of all the people in all of the world that I would have thought would have had some sort of corruption about them, Trump was pretty high on that list.
Should have been, but isn't.
Wild. But he's not, though,
The people who are... folks like her, because I just can't get over it. In the same goddamn seat, on the same show, with the same people, she's telling you that Trump was installed by the Russians and the election was illegitimate. He's an illegitimate president, and that's fine. No problems. But
it's amazing.
Any other criticism, it's unbearable. And that's a very good point by Ted Cruz to point out. And what did the audience make of this obvious hypocrisy that maybe people on The View should take some accountability for? Oh, no, they decided to scream at F you, Ted Cruz.
Oh, very similar.
When he pointed out that maybe your lives are worse off now than they were 2 years ago. Let's play.
The biggest reason people at home are saying, okay, is my life better today than it was 2 years ago? And I think for the vast majority of Americans, the answer is no.
They censored this. That's why it's... There you have it.
No, I love inflation. What are you talking about?
If we can keep that on screen, I don't know if you can, just that last frame, because that last frame is just adorable as well. Because after Ted Cruz has this back and forth with them, yeah. And the truth is... Well documented, as shown. It's very easily accessible. And then he just gets told, F you. You see him smiling away as he drinks his drink, going, whatever, bunch of losers. And then on the left of him, you got this nobody who is one of the View. I don't know what View this is. And she's sat there looking most upset. I just, oh my God, we have been taken to task, and you certainly have.
Anyway. Are you sure it's not just because actually there's an authentic desire to have really high prices on everything?
No, they love the high prices. I also can never get over how the View's logo literally looks like the party from 1984, but hey, a whole other thing. Because we'll end this off with some newest news in regards to Crooked Hillary, which is that just before we went live, she decided to. I saw this, where she put out a video saying that right-wing extremists already have a plan to literally steal the next presidential election.
Wow, she looks like a bloody lunatic.
I know, but it's could not be more transparent for people.
Yeah.
You have this message from the party you're being fed, in the MSNBC example, that what happened on January 6th is unprecedented, undisclosed. How could someone even question an American election in the slightest? And yet, whenever any other circumstance happens, we get, even before the elections happen, it's rigged.
Well, I mean, let's hope she's right, to be honest. I don't think right-wing extremism is that well-organized.
No, I don't even know how would right-wing extremists steal the election? You'd have to make fake ballots or, you know, get dead people to vote or something. That's how you would do it if you were someone. But it's just, no, that doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah.
But the narrative is pointless, is my point, which is the media grip on the public is so bad that even a random focus group is made up of everyone going, MSNBC, you're full of crap.
Well, the grip's on about 30% of the public. That's the problem.
Not impressive.
Yeah, not enough either. Unlike in Britain, where it seems to be everyone who's just brainwashed. Anyway, let's move on, shall we? So I found this really interesting article on the New York Times, of all places, written by a Dr. Jamie Webster, who's a clinical psychologist in psychoanalysis, because he, like Jordan Peterson, you know, has a clinical practice, and he ends up having to talk to young people about just why everything's terrible for them. And I think that's actually very revealing about a problem, not just in America, but also elsewhere. Probably most pronounced in America. Spoiler alert, that problem's the left. That's what the left is doing to our countries is the problem.
Really, it's not. It's not the right.
No, it's not the right. Although
they're not destroying the schooling system.
No,
and politicizing all the kids in the schools.
Not yet.
No.
Although if Chris Rufo gets his way, maybe they will. Anyway, before we go on, if you want to support us, you can go to lowseas.com, sign up, and watch this freemium, actually. This is free for a week. The Thick Concepts podcast, which is, I think, important, because one of the things that the left has been very successful about is thinning out almost every concept. You can hear it in the reframing of anything they say. So it's not a mother and father, it is parent. It is now parent or child caregiver. Number one, and caregiver number two, because there's a lot that is attached to the concepts of mother and father that are
there is duty.
Exactly. Duty, obligation, and sentiment that are attached. And this is what a thick concept is. And this is one of the reasons why the left is trying to get rid of them. And so I think this is a very valuable podcast. And since it's free for a week, worth going over and watching. But anyway, let's get into this article, because it's very interesting. Teenagers are telling us there's something wrong with America. And that's true. There's clearly something wrong with America. There's something wrong everywhere, so don't feel like you're bloody special here, Americans.
Don't worry, much of the other West is also destroyed.
Yeah, but it is the same problem in the entire English-speaking world. Only the French really are starting to get a grip on it, I'd say, by rejecting Anglosphere nonsense.
I don't think the trade-off's worth it.
No, but have you seen them marching in the streets?
Yeah.
Over the murder of Lola?
Yeah. It's like, Also, they have to deal with the murder of Lola every week.
Sure, but literally marching through the streets screaming immigrant murderers, like, we don't do that. We don't do that. So, okay. Just saying, they're closer to politically actionable solutions than we are. Anyway, teenagers are notoriously suggestible to peers who buffer their nascent sense of self. So a 54% increase in suicides in the 10 to 24 age group between 2007 and 2020 is a serious cause of alarm. Because he's talking, so he's got like three or four teenagers who he doesn't name, obviously. So it's just A, B, and C. But one of them was saying, look, a friend of mine committed suicide. She's like 13, 14. And it made me want to commit suicide. This is how influential, easily influenced teenagers are. And so really what he's saying with this framing is that any leftists who are trying to have access to children or take advantage of teenagers should be treated with utmost suspicion, which I think is fair. And so he carries on. The way adolescents investigate their world for its failings means they touch on an open wound in this country. What happens when we realize the escalator, so crucial to the American dream, doesn't go anywhere? And so the point being, what's the future look like for young people in America? It's not great, is it? Like, what's the future that Rishi Sunak's going to be offering to young people? But the point is, nobody feels like they're part of any kind of national project, right?
Worth dying for.
No, not at all. In fact, there's nothing even worth living for in lots of these cases, which is actually one of the problems. So, like I said, he gives a bunch of examples of the way just teenagers look at the world. Sorry, I've got a scratchy throat for some reason. So teenager B also spoke to the contradictions of the United States to her parents, who seemed unhappy in their work, in their role as parents, in the privileges accorded to them, along with those denied to them, and were enraged by the political environment on all sides. Yet she proclaimed they were pushing their daughters towards the same kind of achievements, the same lifestyle, and any sign of negative emotion from their children was seen as an attack if they were pointing out that the life they were given wasn't any good, when the reality of everything these parents said pointed to the fact, well, life wasn't so good. Why, she proclaimed, would she want any of this, and why do they want her to pretend as if she wants it? They don't even pretend they want it, really, she exclaimed. 14, this person is.
She got a leg up on everyone else.
Oh, yeah. Because she's been born and raised in the disgusting progressive sludge that is modern culture.
Well, at least she recognised that not even her parents want this future.
You sure you don't want to just be a worker at, you know, Starbucks? Maybe you can work in an Amazon warehouse, like your father. What a noble endeavour that'll be.
Some similarities to late Soviet Union. Mm. It's just like, yeah, this is going to be your future. We don't want it, but, you know, good luck.
You should go and get
a degree. Dad say.
Go and get a degree so you can work in a well-lit office and do nothing with your entire life until one day you die. Won't that be a future to look forward to?
But won't I be helping save Western civilization from the evil communists? No?
No, you'll be...
No, we'll be the evil communists this time.
You'll be a good consumer. That's what it'll be. You'll consume. You'll have a wonderful Funko Pop collection.
Sure, but there's no even like overarching narratives about why and if this is justified, why and if it's worthwhile.
No. Just nothing left.
Okay.
Everything has been liquefied. Just, what now? Well, just exist.
But even anything, Netflix. Anything they could sell you is also not really believable.
Well, yeah, I mean, what would they sell you?
Well, for example, Joe Biden's administration would try and sell you on minoritarian civilization. The minorities are great, and the more of them we have, the better, and therefore we all live for the glory of this. And it's like, yeah, I'm not dying for that.
Yeah. He says, on first glance, this feels like your age-old adolescent trying to define a personal space away from their parents' values, attentive to the hypocrisies of any family time and place. What felt new was how quickly this became a fantasy of withdrawal, as if she couldn't sustain a sense of self or place. B wants to move to the countryside and raise dogs. Beautiful, innocent, fluffy dogs just like mine. She doesn't want to work or make money or have children or be with anyone, really. It's like, well, hang on a second. She does want to work. She wants to raise dogs. There's actually, you could have a business where you raise dogs and sold them. That's actually a way of making money. But again, the guy's like, well, she doesn't want to make money. It's like, no, she wants to have a traditional life where she's living for herself in a country community. Wouldn't that be nice? Suddenly it sounds really great. But this 14-year-old has arrived at the return to tradition position on her own. So I don't want to work in this. I want to go live in the countryside with my dogs. I imagine that when she gets a bit older, she'll be like, yeah, I'll find a husband. Start a family. Maybe be part of a country. Who knows? She's desiring a traditional society. That's what she's yearning for.
So my ex-girlfriend was from Kuwait, and I remember speaking to her once. She was baffled by the idea that people in this country who were English, if we were invaded, wouldn't instantly just leave.
Yes.
She didn't understand the concept. It's like, why would you stay and fight for what? What was the point? The whole point being the Kuwait is a fantasy land that's basically just an outpost of America, and that's the whole reason it exists.
Yeah.
Therefore, no one there gives a crap about any of it. Yeah. Plus, on the other flip coin, more than half the population are immigrants. So there is no real country anyway, even if the Americans left them alone to do something.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I do see a lot of the same thing in the rest for us. Like, this girl.
She's yearning for a local, settled community in which there'd be something worth defending.
If there's nothing worth defending, then what's the point? And in which case, well, why wouldn't I just leave and find someone worth defending?
I mean, notice how, like, in a small country village, you wouldn't even have these thoughts coming to your mind, right? You'd be like, oh, well, I have to go and pick up the milk for Mrs.
If we're invaded, we'd just leave. What? No, this is our village.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, obviously not. But, like, she's like, oh, there's a hopeless future. It's like, yeah, but when you're living in a small community, you don't think like that. You get up and go, oh, I've got to go get the milk for Mrs. Groats down the road. You know, she can't go and get it herself. So you're constantly, there are people who rely on you to do things, right? And so you're not like, oh, what's the future hold? Well, I know what tomorrow holds. You know, I've got to take the kids to school. I've got to make sure that I get the shopping in. And then I'm going to go get a bridge night with Janet across the road or whatever it is. You know, like you're constantly doing things. You're part of this, you know, sort of social milieu that's actually worth being in. You know, it makes you feel secure, makes the future predictable. Right? And that's what she's saying. The future isn't predictable, and it's empty. You know, there's nothing worth it.
It's not that it's completely unpredictable. You can predict what you're going to do.
Well, yeah.
You're going to work, and all of your money is going to go to rent.
Okay, yeah. Fair.
You will own nothing.
You'll watch Netflix and be happy.
Okay.
Article after article shows us America's teenagers aren't doing well. Without putting their finger on what is wrong beyond the issue of individual mental illness and the usual bugbears trotted out, social media, video games, the weakening of the family unit... But what are the teenagers telling us is actually wrong? And that's a good question. And so he brings up an American psychoanalyst, I think he's American, Eric Erickson, who was very traditionalist, being from the 1950s. And he was like, well, hang on a second, this guy was right about everything. Erickson theorized that the danger of American adolescence was diffusion when they needed identity. Deep down, he felt Americans lived a series of extreme contradictions between the open roads of immigration and jealous islands of tradition, outgoing internationalism and defiant isolationism, boisterous competition with self-effacing cooperation, to name a few, only loosely held together. Our identity isn't grounded in accrued cultural sensibilities, but rather the unstable ideal of being able to choose in any direction at any moment. And so basically what he's saying is once you get to the point of ultimate freedom... You don't really want to choose anything, right? Nothing seems more appealing than the next option. And so instead of like saying, well, I've got no choices. Well, okay, now you've got all the choices and you just kind of come to a stop. Is that okay? Great. That I didn't want any of this. You know, I actually wanted some boundaries that would help me make an informed choice given what I already have and want to maintain into the future, the direction I want to go left or right. Right. It's what
I'm just thinking of menus.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
I don't know if you would know about the problem with menus.
Was it when you got too many choices, people can't choose?
Effectively, yes. Yeah.
So this is a long-running phenomenon.
It also screws up your kitchen, but that's a whole other, sorry, but it's, derailed conversation.
I saw a study a while ago that apparently more than 7 choices and people just don't choose.
Yeah, well,
you just choose the first one, man, whatever.
But it's also, if you've got 100 choices, you know all the food's frozen.
Yeah, well, that's true too, yeah. But it's not just in food, it's in anything, you know. So the point being, when you get to this sort of like unlimited freedom, nothing looks appealing. And I think that it's genuinely longing for this sort of like, you know, traditional continuity. Society, he wrote, must lighten the conflicts for our children through a promise of security, identity, and integrity that allows for true spontaneity and flexibility that alone can keep a person intact. While Erickson always felt, to me, very much of his time, a kind of mid-century pragmatist who is a tad patrician, as if that's bad. Something that has always rubbed me the wrong way, he says. Returning to his thought lately has felt revelatory, almost prophetic. Oh, it was prophetic, was it? It was, oh no, that guy, oh, that traditional patrician. Oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about. No, he was right. He was right all along. He was right then. He remained right until now, when children are literally going mad because of the lack of structure that they have, and they're killing themselves because it's a cool thing to do that little kids are bloody doing, because they're looking at the future and going, I don't want to be an office drone. And it's like, oh, that's a tad patrician. Yeah, it is. And it's good for them. End of story. It is good for children to have boundaries and a purpose. You know, they actually don't need choices ever on anything. And I'm telling you this as a parent. Don't give your children choices. I mean this 100%. Do not give them choices. They don't need them. They'll be happy with whatever you put in front of them. I promise you. I'm going to keep going on this.
I don't have anything to add.
Okay. Right. I love this whole prophetic thing. It's like, no, it wasn't prophetic. It was a proof that traditions are a set of solutions to problems you've forgotten exist, right? Because you didn't realize that without doing these things in a tradition, that you would end up with problems like this, right? Listen to this. Attachment is confusing, a 14-year-old told me. What a horrible position to be in. You're a 14-year-old, like, well, I'm not attached to anything. So I'm in the here and now. I'm a zero person.
But being
zero.
Attached to something feels weird, is what she's saying.
Yeah, I know. But to a normal person, attachment is totally normal. You live in your house. You're with your parents, your family, your local community. You know, you know everyone at your school. You go and, you know, you do whatever you do. You know exactly what's going on.
Okay, old timer.
Exactly. Old timer. This is within living memory, mate.
So? Things have changed that fast.
Exactly. But they're not good to have changed. And we were wrong to have changed them in the way that we changed them. And we should have had some heed to the prophetic, revelatory statements of the traditionalists from the 50s. We're like, no, they need these things.
Family good.
Exactly.
What?
Local community nice. Right? Attachment is confusing. I start crying but feel nothing, literally nothing, which is weird. And then I find myself telling myself, you're a teenager, teenagers are confused, and anyway, don't get attached to anything, it's all going to change. But then I think of the changes coming and I feel exhausted before really knowing what I want. What a horrible position to be in. No, I can't get attached to that, everything's going to change. Well, I mean, that's the modern world. Exactly, but then you look at the changes and you think, oh God, these changes are awful. Everything's changing for the worse,
but
always.
But it's what's coming, so... But as a single individual, what are you to do?
Well, that's the point, but it's only what's coming because collectively we're allowing this to happen. When B spoke about her gender identity, something suicidal broke through. The precious contradictions and vulnerability of being a girl felt too much, and she would double over in my office saying she had a period as if to demonstrate something unbearable about verging on womanhood. Identity seemed to name a point of the utmost pain and confusion. Identity politics, so fraught on both sides of America's political divide, wasn't the cause of B's pain. In fact, identity politics too is born from the suffering our adolescents pinpoint. And as in, maybe a clearly defined role for womanhood was actually beneficial for young women.
Just some guidelines. No, you have to do this.
No, you have to do this.
No.
No, we're way past the point of guidelines.
I'm no longer asking, says
Carl. I'm not. No, I'm not. Right?
Have children.
Yeah. You will get, like, Shinzo Abe, you will get married, you'll have children, you will not go on TikTok, you will not post nudes of yourself on OnlyFans, right? No, these are not good.
We don't even have guidelines.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, this is my point.
Exactly.
Like.
We don't even have guidelines. I'm not asking anymore. You're going to do this? Like, I'm not even joking. Like, I don't even care anymore. I'm beyond the, choice. No, the children.
I wonder what you make of this. I've been thinking about this. Slight derail, but...
Go on.
Ties in. So, was it about 50 years ago? Something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Women didn't have to work if they didn't want to. In the sense of, like, a man could actually earn enough money to pay for his family.
Not in any of the communities my families came from.
Yeah, not your ones, but I'm just thinking, if you look at, like, the employment rate of different countries on Earth, like, I look at Serbia, and 50% of their women have to work, they're employed.
Yeah, this is the point that V keeps making to me.
It's like 72% or something over here.
They've got, like, massive gender equality because everyone's poor.
But it's just... I don't know if that matters so much.
What do you mean?
Well, the rich West, everyone has to work constantly and they can't save any of their money. So what's the point of being rich?
Yeah. No, that's a great point.
I mean, is there any value here, actually?
It certainly was the case that the wife would work a part-time job. So, you know, she'd work from like 10 till 3 or something and then pick up the kids. So she wasn't in full-time employment like the husband. So she'd get more time out at home and stuff like that with the children. But, you know,
a lot both have to work a full-time job and no one can buy a house.
Yeah.
Like,
What's the point in this? You're 17.
Go live in Serbia. Screw this.
Like, go get a degree. Why the hell would I want to? You know, you can work for just some international corporation. They'll pay you what they're required to pay you by the government.
Cool.
You'll work 9 to 5, and then you'll kill yourself at 40. Anyway, carrying on, because honestly, this is just tragic, and I really want to go through it, right? I looked in the mirror and I couldn't recognize myself. A 17-year-old patient explained to me after going to the emergency room for an extreme episode of depersonalization, right? Her identity felt attacked by what felt outside of its scope. What if she was gay? What if she was more like her parents than she thought? Did she feel more American, or did she feel closer to the country where her parents came from? She couldn't. Why couldn't she do the things she wanted to do most and seem to give way so easily to things she didn't want to do? These questions were asked through action, sex, drugs, failing to do her work, doing her work to the utmost perfection, but also as a relentless internal attack. Where is your sense of self? Right. So she's an immigrant, or descendant of immigrants, so she's culturally misaligned, doesn't really know if she's an American. She's got, like, another culture that she feels attached to. So actually, you know, immigration, not good for the child, right? And then immigration into a totally debauched culture, where it's like, right, okay, now you're going to have to go do loads of sex and drugs, even though you don't really want to. But it's constantly around you, and it's cultural pressure.
I don't really know why Muslims want to come to Europe.
No, I have no idea. And America as well. But this is what we've done to them. You know, this is what we have allowed. We're like, oh, well, everyone's the same, aren't they? It's like, no, it turns out we're not all the same. Does that everyone's different everywhere. On the other end of the spectrum, one can often find the stories of adolescent, mostly white male school shooters with the same set of difficulties swimming around identity, a self that's falling apart, an internal attack that is cured through imagining an external one, and saddest of all, cries for help before the act that remain unanswered. He gives the example of a 15-year-old who's accused of killing 4 students in a high school in Oxford, Michigan, who wrote in 2021, "The first victim has to be a pretty girl with a future so she can suffer like me." The yawning emptiness of the future, where you can choose everything, but none of it matters. What is the point of any of this? We all have these questions about how precarious life has to be in this country, how to live with the hopelessness about the future that is emerging, and how all of this is coming up against the pursuit of self and freedom that is so celebrated in America. Yeah, but it's a giant chasm of emptiness. It's a giant chasm of empty, materialist consumption. As you get up, you work your job for Amazon, you go home, then you watch Amazon Prime and get an Uber Eats delivery.
Hand your money over to your landlord, and then your real landlord.
And then tomorrow you do it all over again for nothing. That's the problem with America.
Anyway, wonderful note to end the show on, so we'll go to the video comments.
Hey, Carl, who do you think's a better grifter, BLM or His Holiness Pope Racket?
Pope Brackett? Who's that?
I guess the current Pope.
Who's a better grifter, BLM? I'm going to go with the Pope.
It's a longer-term grift, but I think it's got more investment in it.
Well, that's the thing. It's more successful.
Yeah, but you got to work harder.
Well, BLM, I mean, like, they raised, what was it, 100 million or something, effectively. But then...
I think it's 100 billion overall.
No, the organization.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah, 90 million, yeah.
And then it's kind of died.
Yeah, but it only took them a couple of years, and they've got a bunch of mansions out of it. Now they've got the rest of their lives to sit with their wealth.
Yeah, or I feel like the Catholics are doing better than they are that.
Yeah, but it's a lot more investment. You've got to work really hard for a long time to become the Pope. Years of grifting.
Oh, you mean as the Pope rather than... Okay. Yeah, in which case being BLM is better.
Yeah, it's a much easier grift.
Yeah.
You know?
D and the Dogs with another legend of the Lotus Eaters. From Daniel comes the story of Fort Ontario. This is near Oswego State University, where Daniel is attending. There's many ghosts, including that of George Fikes. He died in the fever epidemic of 1782. But they say if you jump over George's grave once, he will haunt you forever. If you jump over his grave 10 times, he will stop haunting you. But if you jump over his grave an 11th time, you can choose the person he's haunting. Callum.
Let's get haunted, Callum.
Oh no, I'm being threatened with being haunted. Apparently it's Nick Rakita, the Pope.
Oh, well, BLM, definitely. Rakita's a crap grifter. He's nearly lost his YouTube channel. Not even a billionaire.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't really understand the question. Then.
Doesn't even own a mansion. Worst grifter. Honestly, you should find a better grift, Nick.
get good. Find some fentanyl in the back pocket.
Yeah. Honestly, what a... Honestly, is like going to law school and running a law YouTube channel, that's not even a grift. It's a crap grift. That sounds like work. You know, these BLM types, honestly, they've got you beat, Nick. Anyway, Colin says...
Just, we appreciate from how little BLM actually... Like, those three people. Yeah. There's a minimal amount of work possible.
It's incredible, isn't it?
So, yeah, George Floyd died. The police, yeah, okay, give us money and we'll solve it. You did? Okay, thank you for that.
I just can't imagine having...
Give five speeches that year and leave.
Can't imagine having, like, the international establishment looking at you and bring like, Patrice, come here. Everyone's going to give you loads of money. But really? Yeah, millions, tens of millions. Like, it's going to be great. I can't imagine, like, every newspaper writing a puff piece about me and being like, oh, we've got to donate to Black Lives Matter to help black people. It's like, okay.
What's the downside?
Well, all these companies, Microsoft, like, you know, all of these, like, everyone is giving you money. It's like, this is great.
But there's a catch. The right wing, the evil right wing, might say, now, I know this is harsh, that you didn't do any work for this money.
I will take that on the chin.
Okay.
I'll put up a video of me crying, saying how they're going to take it all away from me.
It's a tough grift. Very tough grift.
Staggering. I just can't get over it. Okay. So anyway.
Go to the comments.
Yeah, Colin says, the Epoch series is the main reason I became a Lotus Eaters member. Loving the series. William Part 5 is on my next to watch list. It is interesting how, like, William the Conqueror, he's not a bad guy, I would say, which is remarkable, given that he grew up in 11th century Normandy, where everyone's evil. Like, everyone is evil.
Is that just because they're Danish? Or?
No, it's because they're French.
No.
French. No, it's because everyone in the 11th century is evil, basically. Like, by modern standards, everyone in the 11th century is a terrible person and rough. Like, everything is rough. And William, like, there are loads of assassination attempts on his life by the time he's 15. He's had to flee from his own castles because people have tried to kill him. And then eventually he becomes 15, reaches the age of majority, takes over an army, and then has to start suppressing revolts in Normandy from barons, or not barons, like, you know, counts or whoever, knights or whatever it is. And so he has to go around just taking, he's been a warmonger his whole life. And somehow he's not the worst person on earth at the end of this. It's like, man, if I were him, I'd have been flaying people all the time. I'm like, no, I'm sick of this shit. I mean, he does flay a few people. Anyway, yeah. Like, William has a conscience somehow, which is remarkable.
I just love how Crusader Kings actually did capture the era surprisingly well.
Yeah.
Well, you're having a conversation about, well, he's not the worst guy in the world. He only kills some people some of the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, he killed like 200,000 Northerners. That's pretty bad. And he regretted this. But there was a massive revolt in the north, so, you know. James says, is there really any way to save the UK at this point? Well, the UK or the US? Is there really any way to save any of it? No, yeah. Not really. Yeah. Feels like we've gone over the edge. Yeah. I mean, I don't see a way out of this. It's not collapse.
I mean, there's an Irish solution, but it's just not fun.
Go on.
Not live.
Oh, right, yeah. I don't want to form the Welsh Taliban.
No, you don't need to do that.
What? Okay, tell me after. Lord Sveggy says, Rishi looks and acts like the butler puppet from Thunderbirds. John, can you pull that up? Because that's a really great comparison. I want Callum to see it, because I know you've never seen it.
I think I've watched Thunderbirds. I was very young. So, I don't
know. Yeah, the butler from Thunderbirds, yeah.
Isn't the bald guy? Oh, no, that one, yeah.
The guy with floating arms. He does have this very weird...
I don't know, I'd rather vote for the butler.
Oh, yeah, I totally would. The butler seems more human. Shadow in the Stars says, expressing joy of the skin colour of a nation's leader seems kind of racist. Oh, yeah, but we're way past that now, aren't we?
There's a good point in the chat, which is just, well... It's annoying that it all rests on Farage, but the right does in this country at this moment. And if he does just rejoin Reform or whatever, he's not going to rejoin any of the other parties. That's not happening. Shitty candidates. 2 years to the next election. Plenty of time to prep and actually do it properly and not just have to deal with, okay, we're running, I guess. Fuck it.
Yeah.
Even if he only takes like 3 seats, who cares? Like, that's enough to start the collapse.
Yeah.
Like, him personally just takes South Thanet. It's
that'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
finally,
take the conquest, for Christ's sake.
The prophecy is fulfilled.
Because we wouldn't have any of this nonsense of like, oh, well, he should be given a knighthood or something. Screw that.
I mean, he should, but...
Just storm into Parliament, start giving speeches about the foreigners have got to go. Whatever.
You're not laughing now, are you?
Yeah. Yeah. I know he's old. I know he's bored, but he's not really bored because he keeps getting back into it.
You know, so he wants it. And the thing is, I want him to win it. You know, he's been doing this for such a long time and he's had so many forces against him. I do want him to win at this point.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think Farage would be a better bloody choice for this country than anyone else.
How weak will the rhetoric be of, oh, you don't want to vote for those guys? Oh, what if Labour get in? It's like the Labour victory is assured.
Yeah.
Like, we know that's happening at this point with because of you people. So it's... It's if you step aside, frankly.
Yeah.
Well, we're taking this whole ship down.
Do it, Farage. The Wigan survivalist says, even Joe Biden can read a teleprompter more subtly than Dishy Rishi. It's true. Like, Rishi Sunak is just... It's weird how Rishi Sunak is like a black hole of charisma. Like, he's exactly what I would expect a banker's candidate to look like and sound like.
The actual embodiment of a puppet. Like, that term gets used a lot and we forget what it really means.
Yeah, it does. Like, the actual embodiment of, like...
Silently turns up. Silently sort of gives speech and silently stands there and then leaves.
I kind of feel that if the camera tilted a bit, you'd see the tentacle that was, you know, in his back and puppeteering him, like from Goldman Sachs. Kevin says he's focusing on Klaus Schwab at the back of the room holding up cue cards. Don't be stupid. Klaus Schwab's rich enough to pay someone else to hold up the cue cards. Duh. Baron von Walk says, helpful tip, whatever an English Conservative promises one thing, expect the opposite when it comes to policy. Rishi says police should focus on real crime, expect more hate speech laws, and rainbow jackboots stomping on her face for mean tweets. Yeah, I mean, they already do. It's already illegal. Don't tweet something mean about gays. This is literally a crime. Or make sure you've got an anonymous account. Matthew Griffiths says, it's officially over, lads. Rishi, the net zero, cashless, social credit, globalist shill is in charge. There's no way he lets this opportunity slip by. Yeah, I think so. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I did notice Wall Street Bets also hate him because of the central bank digital currency.
Yeah. Didn't he want a government-owned Bitcoin of some sort?
That's what the central bank
is. That is the digital currency. Yeah.
Basically, I know money's worthless already, but not even owning money anymore. Even in your card. Your bank won't own the money, the government will own the money. And if they just don't like what you're saying, just forget not having a bank account, forget having money at all.
Crazy.
Just become a vagabond overnight.
Yeah.
Because you oppose the government.
It's mental. Paddy says, we've decided you voted wrong when you chose Boris. Try again. I mean, don't get me wrong, like, of all people...
You voted Liz Truss. Try again.
Yeah, exactly. But of all people, Boris, like, he's the safest thing for the globalists to have in power. Like, he's a great... Like, people really like him, and he will do everything you want. Why would you want to get rid of this person?
Like, he had the perfect opportunity to oppose you people, and he didn't.
Yeah.
I don't get who's orchestrating this at this point. It's just dumb. Just mass dumbness.
Yeah.
Seems to have taken over.
Or they know it just doesn't matter, you know.
Maybe.
Because that's the thing. Like, is the Labour Party going to be any more resistant to globalism? Like, AA keeps going on about how we should have supported Jeremy Corbyn. Because, you know, for all his flaws, and he has many, Jeremy Corbyn is not one of them. And that's true.
Sure, but I'm also white and kind of want to live.
Yeah, so. I know, but, like, Jeremy Corbyn wouldn't have had, you know, the WEF logo on his death squads. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm still hopeful. You just get a few seats and the things will start changing.
I mean, come on, Nige. But anyway, he says, you know, you voted wrong when you chose Boris, try again. Sorry, you can't vote for Kemi Badenoch. Okay, you voted for Truss. You voted wrong again. We'll fix it for you, don't worry. Please clap. That's exactly how it is. Lord Nerevar, it's rather amusing to watch all of the media talking heads rejoicing over Rishi being brown than getting ratioed all over the place. Yeah, I tell you what, if there's one thing this has done, is there's a noticeable uptick in racism.
In people opposing identity politics.
No, in people opposing Indians.
There's that too.
I've seen a lot of that going around.
One of the things I have found funny is that we had the first cabinet ever with no white men. And it died within 40 days.
Yes.
And now we have the brown man who is completely unelected.
Yes.
So,
But the point is, like, is Rishi Sunak going
to
come out?
Still got to clap.
Is Rishi Sunak going to come out and be like, I'm the Conservative Prime Minister of Britain and everyone's being racist to me. I'm the victim of the racism online.
You're Hindu. That's not going to work.
Exactly. It's never going to happen.
You're a Muslim, yeah.
Exactly. That's why online trolls have been going bananas. with all the anti-Hindu, anti-Indian stuff.
God, it would be funny like if he just joined in, though. Just start getting a Twitter spat with Sadiq Khan about India-Pakistan.
I mean, if he wants me to support
I'm calling that now, actually. I'm saying that is going to happen, for sure. We're going to have, because we've got Leicester, the India-Pakistani conflict. I really think we're going to end up with Sadiq Khan versus Rishi Sunak about India-Pakistan.
If Rishi wants to get me on side, that's what you need to do, Rishi.
You cannot even poo in Lu.
Anyway, Lord Nerevar says, remember, if the situation was hopeless, their propaganda would be unnecessary. This is a big problem we have to face now, but we can and will face it with pride and patriotism and stand up to the globalists. No, I'm not anti-Semitic. Oh, yeah, who was that? Like, it was like, the word globalist is anti-Semitic.
LBC.
Oh, shut
tobacco salesman. Oh, so.
Honestly. Like,
yeah,
Rishi
Sunak. Like tobacco, so.
Rishi Sunak, classic Jew. What?
What?
Exactly. It's not anti-Semitic called Rishi Sunak a bloody globalist.
Hindus, but the Jews of the real. Technically, they are kind of the Jews of America. Because they do as well as the Jews in America. Their average income is just as high.
I don't
think their representation that... amongst CEOs is just as high.
Okay, we're going to put a pin in that.
All right.
Free Will says...
We'll get back to the question of whether or not Hindus are Jewish.
Well, look, blacks are Jewish now. Yeah. Hindus may as well be Jewish. Yeah. This is a very incorporative and expansive
How do we
identity.
Become Jewish?
I think it involves an operation, actually.
What?
What do you mean?
What about the Jew gold inside you? What do you mean?
No, circumcision.
Oh, that. Oh, yeah. I was thinking South Park, never mind.
Yeah, no, I really don't want to have to do that. So, Free Will says, what was the point of Boris trying to come back? He had a huge 80-seat majority, still did nothing that he promised in his manifesto. Exactly. Like, he just did everything the globalists wanted. What was the point? He was the architect of this disaster by his behaviour and refusal to enact his manifesto pledges. Yeah, totally true. HR Slave says, I subscribe to AA's theory that the Tory membership picked the wrong candidate the first time around, so everything possible had to be done to place Rishi as PM. I say, bring on the Tory party collapse. It's what they deserve. Oh, yeah, I mean, this was obviously a revolt from the globalists in the Tory party against the populist candidates, obviously. It's so great.
Yeah, there are all people who were backing Kemi who are miserable right now.
But who isn't miserable?
Right? I did see Kemi endorse Rishi. Yeah. People were thinking that meant something. Honestly, I think it was just that everyone knew that's the way the wind was going.
Yeah.
So if you're going to be in the party, you got to do that. But not fun.
George Happ says, Cruz says the right things, but I think he's just appealing to his base because of his presidential ambitions. I remember that he threw the January 6th protesters under the bus because it was more politically convenient at the time. Yeah, well, this is always the problem with Ted Cruz. Same with the social media interrogations. It's like, so Mr. Zuckerberg, blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, but do something. Nothing ever gets done. He can't do anything.
Just threaten to nationalise them.
Yeah.
They're left to it literally every day, so of course they're more scared of them, so okay.
I will literally petition Joe Biden to nationalise Facebook. I'll get all the socialists on side.
No, but you do it from the rightist perspective. Like, you remember when Donald Trump was in charge? Mm. And they'd be like, you need to stop censoring conservatives. And the left are sat there like, when we get into power, we're going to nationalise you if you don't work with us. Who are you going to pick? If you're
just,
on Facebook?
Just start nationalising everything anyway. Screw it.
That's right, I'm right wing. Okay.
A super right wing, Callum.
Oh, for God's sakes. So, when's that book club and Nivola coming, Carl?
Never, probably. But no, the point is, like, just, I don't even care about left and right anymore. What I care about is just screwing over these people.
My philosophy is I don't like you.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Whatever my politics are.
If Jeremy Corbyn is going to nationalize Facebook and Twitter, okay, go crazy. I don't care. Like, look at the situation we're in.
The UK government nationalises Twitter in the UK. Call it Britta. And it's only British people allowed.
Yeah, do it. Marcus. Everything is so clearly preordained at this point, right? Like, there's clearly some overarching power that's in charge. It really doesn't matter what we say or what we vote for. Like, yeah. I was very jaded on the subject. Omar says, always good to remember that the left are also in support of riots in the capital. They are the only against counter-protest to their cause. Completely true. We literally have multiple cases of BLM, feminist, lefty riots around the White House or attacking federal buildings before and after January the 6th. January the 6th wasn't even half as violent as the next 10 Kavanaugh hirings. Yeah, exactly. It's just crazy, isn't it? Alexander Drake says, media, we're going to force these MAGA chuds to answer for January the 6th, the worst event in the US since 9/11. Chuds, unlike BLM Antifa, this was an actual peaceful protest. Media, crying Wojak. Adrian says, if only there was something wrong with America. It's more like America is the living embodiment of the cesspit of failed ideas in the world right now. Racism, check. Discrimination against the lower classes, check. Communism, double check. Murdering and ruining children, check and check. The state is God, check. Death cults, you know it. And unending criminality, but of course. Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, it's just... I mean, what do you make of the thesis that America is the source of all the problems?
A lot of it's true, sadly. I really think it comes to defining what Americanism is, and the rightists in America define it as the founders would, and that's interesting, and you know, has some pitfalls, some negatives in the long run.
Sure, but it also kind of
those pointed out.
But it also kind of requires everyone to be a God-fearing Christian.
Yeah, well, it only very recently in American history did decide to abandon all of that.
That's true.
They were like, no, this is part of the deal. Like, yeah. We're not having the Catholics get out. Catholic president, what are you, mad?
I'm very much against choice these days.
But it's, you know, all of these presuppositions were there for quite a long period of American history.
And it worked really well, actually.
And yeah, it was successful. And even without the geopolitical changes that made America the superpower it is, but, you know, just on its own place, it worked for its own people. And
the standard of living the Americans had compared to the Brits at the beginning of World War II was staggering.
Another complete inversion of whatever that was for whatever we have now, that America exports to all of us who live in its sphere, is really unwanted by everyone, including its own people. So yeah, I mean, on that front, 100%.
Again, taking away choice from children is a moral good. Make them go to church. Make them believe in God. Make them do all of these things that you don't want to do, because it's good for them.
So I consider myself on the left, says Sargon.
Not on the left.
Yeah. You don't remember Once Upon a Time?
Well, I mean...
You're like, I should be on the left, but I'm not allowed.
Yeah, but like, that's because I wasn't crazy. And then I started really looking into all of this, and it turns out this is all cancer, and none of it's good. And that 1950s psychologist was like, yeah, you know, we need patriarchy. Kids need to be told what to do. Otherwise they go mental and they start killing themselves. And it's like, okay, well, good. I don't want to start killing themselves. Tell them what to do. They'll be fine when they move. They'll have all the choice in the world when they move out. Let them go.
People just say amen in the comments. I don't know.
Am I wrong? Am I wrong? That's the thing. Prove me wrong. Epidemic of depressed and suicidal children.
Atheists make the best Christians.
I had this argument a while ago, actually. Like, I could do Christianity better than any goddamn Christian, I tell you that. Shame on atheists, really. Moving on.
That would be a funny, like a Maoist Christian.
I bet I could get people to come to church.
Yeah, Christianity with Maoist characteristics. Just
anyway. Maybe. I think we're out of time then.
Oh, are we? Roughly by. For more from us, blazeears.com. Check out the free stuff as mentioned. Otherwise, back tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Thank you and goodbye.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.